Welcome to Refirement Life, the podcast for anyone navigating life transitions or planning to make life transitions to ensure your next years are your best years. Listen in for insightful, generous, and sometimes humorous conversation. It's time to get fired up with Christine Zamuda and Muge Wood, your hosts for this latest episode of Refirement Life.
Hello, and welcome to Refirement Life, episode 46. This is Before the Pitch. I'm here with Lisa Dion, and Lisa has just a fascinating background and a lot to share with you today. First, let's just introduce her. So Lisa is part of the enterprise sales team at Google and has commercial responsibility for a group of enterprise customers, where she currently leads an account team that aims to impact and amplify the way her customers serve their end customers, with a focus on go-to-market strategies, global scale, and measurable outcomes. We all love measurable outcomes. Lisa brings 25 years of experience in leading U.S. and global sales pursuit teams, along with building and executing business development strategies. Prior to joining Google Cloud, Lisa spent the majority of her career in the Microsoft ecosystem, both at Microsoft and PwC. And just a little pro tip, Muge and I both knew Lisa at Microsoft, so we're really thrilled to have such a great friend and accomplished lady here on the podcast. So when you start to get exposed to Lisa, you will quickly understand that she's got an inspirational speaking style, collaborative leadership approach, and has consistently gravitated to startup teams. So please welcome Lisa Dion.
Thank you, Christine. I'm excited to be here. Thank you all.
Yeah.
I've been an avid listener. 46 episodes. That's incredible.
Yeah. It's a little engine that could. We're now heard in 23 countries. You have to say hello to our friends in Dublin. Dublin really loves this podcast.
Friends in Dublin. Christine is making an in-person visit to connect with the fan base in Ireland at the end of August. But Lisa, it is such a treat to have you as our guest today. As Christine mentioned, we all work together at Microsoft, but it is beyond work. I've always been impressed with your listening skills, your giving nature, being a great friend as well as a colleague. And I've been following a little bit from afar as you continue to reinvent yourself through life's transitions and continuing to thrive. So I'm thrilled to get our inspiration from you today. So welcome.
Yeah, we had a good run, didn't we, the three of us together?
We sure did.
And a lot of fun and good laughs. Delighted to be here. And coming up on 50 episodes, I'm really curious about who your 50th is, but we'll get to that later.
Going to be a surprise. All right, so let's talk about Before the Pitch. As Muge says, you're so generous with your time and your learnings, and I have always loved how you were just the spark that makes others be better and tap into their best selves. So tell us a little bit about the journey and why you created Before the Pitch.
Before the Pitch, yeah. So Before the Pitch really came out of actually a deal pursuit that I lost. And Before the Pitch is actually the title of a speech. And in this deal, it took me down, quite frankly. And I went into kind of a dark place over this loss, and it was a big deal. There's a lot on it. There's a lot of, we were gonna hire a team. I mean, there's a lot to it. And I realized like I needed to go do some personal work around myself and really pull myself out of that. So it's as much about that work and then what, you know, kind of what happened after that, but it's it really is at a bigger kind of headline. It's really just the story of my life in a lot of ways. Just different pivots from growing up in a bit of a crazy house and realizing those set of behaviors weren't going to serve me and how I navigated that. And then running, you know, parallel with professional life. So, a lot of good pivots in there, a lot of good lessons. And it's, you know, something I think probably you both can relate to. The losses always stick with you a little more than the wins.
Definitely. The bigger they are, the harder you fall.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that one was a long fall.
Yeah. Well, and I love the approach from what I've learned about before the pitch, that there's some great spillovers to your personal life. And I think more than ever after the pandemic, we're realizing the worlds are very closely connected, right?
You can't really
be great in your work life without being somewhat balanced in your personal life and a little bit vice versa. So there's three parts to this philosophy. Deciding, harnessing your emotions, keeping your emotions in check, and being selective about the language you use. So let's talk a little bit about deciding. There's this point about deciding to decide.
So I call it the power principle. So it's the power of deciding, the power of emotions, and the power of language. And when before the pandemic, I used to teach this as a workshop. It's like a 2-hour to 4-hour workshop, depending on what a team wanted. And I would always say, you know, the power of deciding is like the most important thing you can do. And you made the point of our personal life and our professional life. And really, you know, people would often say keep them separate, and I completely disagree. I think they're so connected, and certainly you highlighted that in the pandemic. I also talk about what you do. If you can do it at home, you can do it anywhere, because home is the hardest place to do any of these principles that I talk about. And the reason why is at work, there's an expected set of behaviors that we're all expected to do if we sign up to be a worker. And you come to work and you have these certain behaviors, but at home, it's like the people that's closest to your heart, right? So where we get triggered probably the most. So deciding, you know, deciding has a couple of elements to it. I'll first talk about a personal decision and then one at work. So people can often relate to the power of deciding when they share with me that there was a relationship they needed to end. And they said something like, I'm done, I'm out, I'm leaving this relationship. And they were so solid. And I said, well, tell me more about that. And they're like, well, I felt it in my stomach, or I felt it in my heart, whatever, wherever they say. But they said, I knew I was done. And after that, the next person they meet or soon after potentially is their life partner. But people kind of have that very visceral experience. It's a physical experience that they're like, I was done. So let me pause and see if either of you have ever had that experience where you're like,
I'm absolutely.
And, yeah, and what, completely.
And we've talked about this on another session. Remember, Muge, like how your body is a feeling first before thinking, and to listen to what your body is telling you. Go ahead.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, it's logical, but not really. You know when it is time to do something, whether it's a relationship, retiring, changing jobs, picking up a hobby, cutting relations off with a friend. Like, you know you are ready, and you are the only person who can tell that. Now turning that into productive course of action is a whole other thing, but the readiness is key, and it has to come from within, I think, and you are the only one to feel it.
Yeah. And so again, oftentimes it's harder to do that in our personal lives and our professional lives. And so if I relate it to professionals, like I'm taking a sales lens, right, from before the pitch, like it's all about the sales side of it. And if I'm doing my personal work at home, coming to work and making decisions at work that are going to move a deal forward, it just becomes easy. Like those discussions become a lot easier. And something I always talk about is like the hard decision now is the easy decision long term. And that's certainly in personal life and in professional life. If I make that hard decision now, and really it's sometimes just about courage and being able to make that decision, longer term, it will be the easier piece later on. And then the other part of deciding is the beliefs that go around that decision. And so beliefs are sneaky, quite frankly, because we all have beliefs or biases, maybe is another way to say that. And a belief can be really a limiting belief, like I can't do this because, or I would do it, but, and then next comes the belief. And so if I decide, I mean, that I've either checked that belief, like I'm moving away from that belief, or I'm really stepping into the belief. And so beliefs can be a whole other discussion that's quite long, but it all starts with deciding.
Yeah. I think the other element too is timing, right? I mean, you could decide you need to do this, but holding yourself accountable to actually action it.
Yeah. So then if we think about sales, like bringing it back to the sales lens, it's like, we've probably all worked with people, me included, that I either felt, maybe I felt hopeless about my quota or my situation at work. Well, the beliefs, the emotions, all the language, everything that we're gonna talk about today goes into that decision where I'm like, this is hopeless. Like, I can't be successful here or in this role. And likewise, if I've decided I'm making my number, I mean, and I remember stories you would tell me, Christine, in Mid-Atlantic, like the way you all would get together as a team and decide.
Right.
And you held each other accountable to whatever it was. I mean, it is a momentum builder. Mm-hmm. Or detractor for that matter, but certainly a builder when it seems like, or an individual's like, I'm going after that number, I'm gonna get to it. Your actions and emotions, everything you have that follows will be different.
Very cool. Think one thing I'm curious about your perspective, Lisa, is we make decisions based on our best judgment, the variable state of emotions that we are in. And then later on, we can get into a second guessing situation and say, what if, because, you know, events have unfolded, we now have a clearer view of what has happened, the alternate path that we could be taking. How do you think we should handle that second guessing situation that is not entirely productive? And even if we are having those thoughts, how to channel them to something more positive?
Yeah. In a sales deal, like I'll just take the sales lens first, because that's really what before the pitch is as much about as anything, is when I talk to my account team, I'm like, we're going to take incremental steps. And so some decisions are recoverable, some are not. And so if we're approaching an unrecoverable decision, then we decide as a team, is this the best path forward? Are we prepared that if it doesn't go our way, mm-hmm. or whatever, you know,
right.
it's not favorable to us, are we, and it's non-recoverable, are we okay with that? And that is like the simplified lens that I apply. And then certainly when I think about raising my kids, you know, if they came home and someone had gossiped, I'm like, some decisions are recoverable, some are not. If you were the one gossiping, you need to, you know, like own your side of the street and make the apology. And if you're unwilling to, well, then you're, you know, it might be a different outcome. So I think it both applies, the recoverability and non-recoverability, but it's being very intentional about that and really just owning it and being accountable to that is how I think about it.
I like that you put it out there, and then obviously you're gauging interest and alignment from people to say, yes, I'm there, or no, I'm not, and this is why. How hard is that to get everybody on the same page?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's I think the open communication piece of this is really important. And if we're in a pursuit, it's rarely in a vacuum. Like my style is very collaborative, and everyone's along for the decision. Ultimately, I will make the decision on the pursuit of go, no go, but, or whatever that incremental decision is, but everyone has a say, and I'm definitely open to having my mind changed. Like I'm very open to that. But it's like, are we serving the customer? Are we serving the company we work for? And, and are we operating with integrity?
Right.
And those are sort of the lenses that I would apply.
So if you do the first step right and you do it really well, I would imagine the second part becomes easier because the emotions are a bit diffused because everyone said, yep, this is our plan. We're doing it. We kind of know where we're going, right or left. And if it doesn't work out, well, we're going to be, you know, perhaps taken aback, but it's expected.
Yeah, that there's always a
part. Are they though? I wonder about that. So let's talk about the emotions.
And they can also obviously be winning the deal, which is like,
That everything becomes okay and justified, right? It's okay. So the second pillar of the philosophy around emotions, I think that's a huge one, I think, Lisa, in terms of harnessing the positive emotions, the emotional intelligence within the teams. Because I think at the end of the day, you can present a lot of facts and figures to a decision makers. We have all done it in sales pursuits, but that doesn't mean the logical path is chosen, right? Emotions are an invariable component of how we decide as human beings, right or wrong. So how do you go about harnessing and channeling it and managing that individually, collectively?
Yeah, there's a couple of elements to this as well. So people will often use emotions and feelings as interchangeable, and they're actually different. So emotions is something the chemical release in our body. So anxiety, it produces a chemical. The feeling I have about that anxiety is how I describe it. You know, like I might have tension in my hands, or I might be holding my breath or something like that. So they're different. So emotions, you know, when it's high stakes, and I mean, I'm talking about high stakes, but a lot of times decisions aren't high stakes, but we get into our patterns of decisions and our patterns of emotions. So an emotion I might feel, or experience is probably a better word, emotion I might experience, it might be in my stomach, and I know, oh, that's anxiety for me. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I have gratitude, like it's this heart-opening experience, and I try to stay very aware. Now, I'm not asking my entire team to do that, because this is my personal way of operating. However, when emotions, what I've come to learn is that emotions are oftentimes repeated patterns based on the beliefs that I have. And there's beliefs I also talked about in deciding. So you just see the pattern come up, and some of them serve me, some of them don't. So if I have that indicator that, oh, okay, I'm feeling a little bit anxious here. My nervous system is a little, you know, it's high stakes. Okay, I need to just take a step back. And my goal is to always stay really neutral. And so if we have, you know, I mean, there's a lot of studies on emotions, and we can say that there's a core like 8 to 10, but there's really a lot. So if we could spread them all out and had an hour to talk about them, we could say, yeah, there's a range of positive, there's a range of negative. But in the context of a deal, I'm always trying to stay neutral. I'm trying to really detach from the emotional state of the excitement of the deal, or if we're losing the deal, because if I'm in either one, I'm likely not making the best decision.
Right.
I'm trying to detach from the outcome of the win or the loss and just stay in that moment and very, very present when we're leading those kinds of deals. And there's, you know, when wins and losses, like there always are. So does that make sense in terms of how you all think about these things too?
Yeah, I think so. It helps you just be fact-based and not led easily by one extreme or the other.
Yeah. And people's beliefs will really, if people are fear, like on an account team, if people are fear-based, and if I can get them to a neutral state, like we're serving our customer in a really big way. Mm-hmm. But if people are coming at it from fear of maybe loss of a job, loss of the customer, whatever those kind of things are that might be triggers, we're not, as a team, we're not going to be making the best decision in the interest of our customer. And likewise, if we're so positive that we can't see some of these other things that might be happening in the pursuit or happening with the customer, we're also not serving our customer in the best way. Yeah. So the idea that I promote for just this part of it in a deal pursuit is like, let's try to stay neutral and hold each other accountable for that.
So for our listeners, when it's fear-based behavior, what does that look like in a business world?
It comes out in all kinds of, and people start making up stories about the buyer. Yeah. I mean, it's really funny. And you say, do you see what, you know, like I'll say, hey, do you see what you're doing? Like, if the customer hasn't called back, people will make up a story about why the customer hasn't called back. But really, we don't know why the customer has called. We don't know.
They're self-illustrating.
Like, who knows? And so when you're on that roller coaster of the ups and downs of a deal, and when we're high, we're like, oh, they love us. I'm like, we don't know that for sure. let's bring it back down and just stay neutral. But yeah, what I find is that people just make things, I mean, like literally make things up.
Uh-huh.
I think it is interesting because when emotions run high, especially in high stress situations, it can become really negative and toxic, especially when you include multiple parties on a deal. It could be internal and external collaboration. It can, I've seen this happen numerous times. It can turn into, well, you didn't do this. You could have done that. And it's just not a good place. Managing that throughout. And I always appreciated this notion of focusing on the outcome and not the person to try to separate the two. That's one. The other thing is this emotional aspect is so strong. And what happens, let's say, you do everything as a team that you think you could possibly do, and it still results in a loss. And how do you manage emotions post sale in the event of a loss?
In the event of a loss. Yeah, that's a good one. I want to address both. You made two points. I want to talk about both of them. I think this is where culture becomes really important. So it's like the deal inspection or the deal review. Actually, let's call it deal review. It's either inspection or as a leader, am I really trying to help the people? Am I inspecting what they did, or am I trying to amplify what they're doing? And so it's a cultural difference, I think, and I see it a lot in on teams, but also across companies. And when it really is a culture of help, and at Google, we talk about psychological safety. It's not a Google thing. It was like a study that was done. Mm-hmm. And to see psychological safety in motion, it's quite powerful. It's quite powerful. And the customer is served beyond anything I've seen and experienced. And so the way that presents itself in a deal is people will call out, hey, I think we have some risk here. And call out the negatives, like not the negative stuff, but just the risk, like the real risk of, hey, if we don't do this, that like, is that recoverable? Like we have the recoverable conversation quite a bit. So that is something I've really come to appreciate about the deals when people are feeling anxious. I want them to get it out, because if they don't get it out, it's going to come up in really weird ways in our pursuit. The second part, which now I've forgotten what it was, Mugay. When you asked me about managing
post-sale recovery in the event of a loss, when emotions run high, and how do you learn from it and move forward in a positive way? It's tough to do.
It is tough to do. So when the stakes are high, I will often have dry runs. So we do a dry run. We never present the first time to a customer that's the first time. And then if that ultimately results in a loss, I have one-on-ones with each person on the pursuit and just talk about the impact that they made and what was repeatable about those decisions that we made as individuals, but also as a team, and how can we repeat more of that? And so I think it's so important to close the loop with an account team, especially after a loss. It's almost even more important after a loss than the win, because the win, the emotion is high, there's a lot going on and it takes a while to come down from that. But the loss, it's like, when I talk about emotions and maybe some of the negative things that you talked about, Mugay, it's, I try to observe briefly. Because if I get an emotion wrapped around that and I spend a lot of time thinking about that thing and I have this negative emotion, I'm feeling it in my body, the decision I'm going to make, the belief I'm going to bring to that, it just generates more negativity. So again, if I'm back in that neutral state, I observe briefly and I'm able to move on faster and provide that hopefully meaningful feedback to a team or individual of what we can do that's repeatable in the next go.
I think you make a very key point, Lisa, about how even when it happens, the negative emotion, being mindful enough to get out of it so it doesn't persist and pull everybody into a negative cycle. I'll give a very simple example that I experienced personally myself, and I couldn't get out of the negative cycle. And Christine will appreciate this. We talk a lot about tennis. So I go to this tennis drill that I do sometimes with a group of good friends Monday evening, and this one I signed up, I'm really excited to go, and I even realized I had to give up my favorite college baseball championship game that was going on with Texas A&M that one of my kids go to, and I'm thinking, why did I sign up for this drill? But I committed, I am going. So I get there, and this drill is supposed to have six people, and it ended up having nine. And this never should have happened because you are supposed to sign up through the app and there's a process to follow. And it looks like the pro just invited a bunch of people. Now here we are, 9 people. And I am really mad. I'm like, okay, I am spending my time and money and 9 is too many. And I don't even like these people I have never met before. So I gave very direct feedback, of course, to the pro. Like I stopped the drill and what is happening? Why is this happening? But I'm in this negative mindset for the next 90 minutes. Yeah. And eventually one of my friends, she's like, you know, look, you know, we are here now. For the 90 minutes, we will have to make the most of it and deal with this afterwards so that we can make the most time that we have here. And in my mind, I am still talking to myself in this negative thing. This should not be happening. This is a good experience. But she was absolutely right. Once you try to, you know, move beyond that, you deal with what is on your hand a whole lot better. But not easy to do. You know, at the end of 90 minutes, I was still complaining. I gave more feedback. I had another path. I mean, it's a very simple example, but how you can get worked around the axle and it would become even worse if she jumped on the bandwagon with me and we are spiraling together. So luckily she didn't do
that. I mean, and then you think about it in a team dynamic on a sales team and then, it, you know, it's like, can one person bring down the energy in a room 100%? And can one bring up the energy in a room 100%? So, you know, the thing I always say to people is like, be intentional. If you need to step away, I get it. Like we all have our moments of, okay, just too much. And so there's also a learning style aspect to this is like, there's auditory, visual, kinesthetic, probably 3 or 4 other learning styles. And so if I have an emotional setback, it's oftentimes when I need to think about that learning style and like, how do I process that emotion? And so for me, the processing of that emotion is I need to physically move. I need to move space. I need to oftentimes get out and sweat. And so that helps me process because if I don't deal with it, it is going to come up again. I mean, that's the pattern of these types of emotions, positive or negative, but really the negative ones are the ones that tend to stay quite sticky. And then you want to ruminate, like the rumination, because I didn't get enough recognition of how angry I was about. So now I'm going to go tell somebody else about it. And then it continues because that person didn't give me enough recognition. Now I'm going to go tell a third person. Well, now I talked about this one thing that lasted all of 5 minutes. I've now talked about it for 40 because no one was giving me the response I wanted. So I kept going. And then I'm the one that's then feeling the outcome and the associated actions that come after that. So yeah, you nailed it there.
Yeah. So you lead by example. It's clear as you're talking through this and showing your team how to manage all of this. Are there any, you know, tips that you help your directs kind of figure out to use differently than, you know, to just when you're harnessing your emotions? People come to the table with a sum of their experiences. So every single person is different because they've lived a different life. Yeah. So are there a couple practical things that you can just share with our listeners that might be helpful when they're in that situation?
Yeah. And it kind of goes into the last principle of language. But one, if I feel myself getting dialed up in a negative way, I've also stopped listening. Because I'm feeling all this stuff, you know, coming up. And so I will say, I'm processing. I need to probably step away for a few minutes. And that's the signal to the team and their signal to me. Like, we just need to stop for right now. I'll come back to this. Or, so that would be one thing, I'm processing. The second one would be, if we've gotten said bad news, then we just say, hey, let's pause. Let's take a pause and go process again. What I have come to learn over the years is that even when I say that to a customer, like they get it, they definitely understand. And I say, oh, this is a surprise. And I just need to process and take a pause. And they're like, I understand. So yeah, I think language really plays a really big role. And then the second, so I gave you 2 examples there in processing or take a pause. And then the third is really just like, depending on the learning style, whether it's auditory, maybe someone cranks up music and they're able to move through it. For me, it's usually physical. I need to go do something. So understanding your learning style and kind of what kind of checks you out of the of that rumination.
Yeah. I think interrupting the cycle is pretty key in any meaningful way that works for an individual. So as our time winds down, Lisa, I want to pick back up on the last principle you mentioned, the power of language. How does that factor into this? How can it be harnessed for good outcomes?
Yeah. So it's all about the reframe is what I have found over the years. And so as negative things happen, which they do, and deal setbacks, it's that language of I'm processing would be one. It's also celebrating the incremental wins. So as we are, like I'm currently on a new logo team, so there's a lot of setbacks. There's setbacks every single day. And so we, as a team, we will often talk about the incremental wins. The win isn't always like the win.
It's forward progress.
Did we make progress on the deal today? And if the answer is yes, then we're going to celebrate the heck out of that. Is it repeatable? Yes. So all those things that I've talked about in the last 15, 20 minutes, we're looking at, can we repeat that? Can we take it to the next customer? Yes. Can we reframe it as a positive that, well, we actually got an email that worked or whatever the win might be. And so those are ways that we just try to build momentum as a team and certainly as individuals. And again, it's the same thing at home. You know, it's like, that reframing. If John and I have a disagreement, I'm like, I just need to process for a minute. Step away, and I just need to process for a minute. So yeah.
I think Paul will flip that on me though. Like, take out the trash. I just need to process that.
I just need to take a pause, Paul. Yeah, for sure.
That's so great. So, language. And does the language always have to be positive?
I would say generally, yes. Mm. I mean, I talk about honoring where you are. So if you have something negative, you got to honor it. Like it's real. Like it's absolutely real. The goal is to observe briefly.
Uh-huh.
And so if I think about the negative emotions, neutral and positive emotions, if I go from negative to neutral, that's great. I'm in a good place. I'm making progress. But the idea is just to get out of that negativity to neutral to positive. So positive things could be like, I love the thought of, because maybe I haven't won. So if I say, oh, I'm going to win, it's just like it's not in alignment of where we might be as a team. And it's not going to feel real to anyone who's listening on the team. They're like, well, wait a minute. But like, did we do all the sales activities we said we're going to do? Whether it was the reach outs, the demos, the POCs, whatever it is, then yes, those are in alignment. And I love the thought of winning. Mm-hmm. That feels in alignment. So it's ensuring that alignment of language and action are aligned so that I can get to that positive emotion.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I like that phrase in front of that sentence because it does... It brings forward the opportunity that it's possible, you're still a believer, and you're not discounting anything that could still be an obstacle.
That's true. And every team will have their own phrases, like their positive phrases. The ones I just shared are just, you know, kind of easier ones. It's exciting to think about because it is exciting to think about winning. Or it's exciting to think about that, we got momentum in this market. Or, and I will say, I'm in the process of, I mean, that's another one that I say that a lot. I'm processing or I'm in the process of winning, because that's true. I am in the process of winning every single day. And I can look at my calendar and the 99 things I've done today and said, does that qualify? Yes, yes, and yes. So then that belief system that I have about my job becomes stronger because I have all this evidence of these activities that I've done that supports the belief that I'm in the process of winning.
Right. You're being deliberate in your practice and your outcomes.
Very intentional. Yeah, very, very intentional about it all, about the language specifically.
Yep. I think the language we use with ourselves probably is one of the most powerful, right? The negative self-talk versus positive, affirmative, encouraging self-talk. It just has tremendous cascading effect in how we conduct ourselves as well as those around us. And we feel it too, how we feel about the impact of what we are saying on ourselves. So honoring and acknowledging that could go a long way.
Yes.
I agree.
Yeah. So for our listeners, just a couple closing thoughts. definitely take some of the things that Lisa shared to heart and practice them. I think these can be practiced both at home and in the professional setting. Just a quick reminder, deciding to decide, is your mindset aligned for success? Like, what has to happen to get forward progress on either a big deal or a big accomplishment or pursuit in your personal life? Are your emotions in check? We all feel and recognize when it's positive, when it's negative. How can we bring ourselves to neutral so that we see the whole playing field and see the ramifications of what is what's at risk and also what's possible to gain? And then think about those words that you use. I love the thought of trying this at home. I love the thought of being successful in other areas of my life. Like, all of those things are super positive and super helpful. Lastly, if you're interested in this talk for a team, Lisa does do this on a regular basis, schedules permitting. So just reach out to Lisa at lisadion.com, and Dion is spelled D-I-O-N. Lisa, what a treat to have you here today. Thank you so much. The time went by too quickly.
It usually does. I really appreciate the invitation to chat for a little bit. So thank you.
Of course. All right, Mugay. Anything else?
I am. My head is spinning with the reflections to see what I am going to decide to work on and prioritize put these into practice. And I love the possibility for at home and at work, because we do need those things that cover multiple fronts. So it's a real treat. Thank you, Lisa, for helping us pause, reflect, and think through the power of our actions and mindset on possibilities ahead of us to help us all thrive. Thank you.
All right. Until next time.
Thank you for listening. Our hope is to spark a little joy, inspire, and educate our listeners in ways to live an even more meaningful life. If you have reactions to share from what you've heard, please visit our website, refirement.life, to leave a voice message. You may even be featured in a future episode. To keep in touch, subscribe to our podcast, Refirement Life, using the podcast player of your choice. Always remember, you are never too old to set a new goal or to dream a new dream. Thanks again for joining us on this episode. Until next time.